A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
And I watched White Chicks and was not impressed at all. I did not like that movie.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins. The episode you're about to hear is from Sin Week. It's a Q&A session with all of the entire so-called A and B team. So it's me, it's Jeremy, it's Barrett, it's Aaron, it's Danae, it's Jonathan. So everybody's in on this one. So sit back and enjoy a Sin Week podcast. And take it away, Danae.
Hi. Guess what? What's up? It's the final day of a Sin Week.
Sin Week! Yay!
Just to be clear, we are celebrating Sin Week in general, not that it's the last day, because we actually are kind of bummed about it. We've been having such a good time with you guys, and thank you so much, all of our Patreon supporters, for making this digital Sin Week really, really interesting and special. It's something that we're just kind of trying out. Usually we all meet in person. And obviously, we're doing things a little differently. And it's just been so fun to build the chat community. So before we get started on our Ask Us Anything, shout out to some of the people in the chat. I'm not going to get to everybody because there are a lot of you. But
look at all those beautiful people. Look at all those beautiful people.
Laura and Handquake and No Clue and Patrick and Daniel and DQ and Tyler. Let's see. Oh, I see Jeremy, our boss. Straight up in the chat. Metzcast is here. Ian is here. Sid and Polly. Oh my gosh. Cece. There's so many of you guys, and my chat just went crazy.
Maki,
so,
Ricky, Johnny, Mikey.
This is like the, was it Romper Room? Like, I'm showing my age, obviously, but was it, they were like, oh, and I see Susie and I see Michael. Do you remember that?
Was that a kid show?
You know, yeah, like I am old enough to know what Romper Room is, but I never saw it.
How the fuck can you see me, dude? That's creepy.
That would freak me out if I was watching TV and someone would be like, I see you, Danae. Like, So today we're going to be doing an Ask Us Anything. If you guys have questions, you can certainly throw them up in the chat. And I'm going to do my best to get to as many as you possibly can.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
You guys ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's answer some questions.
All right. This first one's from No Clue, who says, will there be at least one virtual event in the future of Sin Week? It would be awesome for those of us who cannot travel and take part at the live event. Anyway, Sin Week rules. So I thought we would start right off here.
Yeah, we have done virtual events from every Sin Week. They've looked different than this. We have live streamed the panels and those kind of things. The difference is there's an audience in the room that we're focused on. And this is like super focused on like the actual streaming chat, those kind of things. So I imagine, yeah, after the excitement of this and the fun of this, we'll kind of look at what it might look like to do one of these even during Sin Week, you know, where we're in front of a camera and kind of more intimate with the virtual fans. Yes, there will, sorry, just heard it. there will always be some sort of virtual aspect where even if you're a Sin Club member, even if you can't make your way to Nashville for in-person Sin Week, there's going to be fun stuff for you for sure. So yeah, that'll always be a part of it.
Well, there's that answer there. We also, for the Sin Weeks in the last year, we do have virtual events during them as well, but we haven't done something quite like this. So yeah,
right.
Thank you for the question. All right, this one's from Nick. Would you rather fight one Aaron-sized Danae or 10 Danae-sized Aarons, and what would your strategy be? I think we should start with Chris on this one.
I will always go with the one over the 10. So I would fight the Aaron-sized Danae before I fought the 10 Danae-sized Aarons, for sure. I think it's important that we all get everybody's answers on this on the record.
I want to know. I certainly want to know.
Because when everybody, you know, splits off later in the summer, when everybody's like molting or whatever happens, there's going to be 10 Danae-sized Aarons out there, and we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. True.
So
I'm with Chris, though. It's not the who the person is. It's the quantity, right? Because, you know, they don't come at you one at a time in real life. They all come at you at once. And I know I've never even been in a fight. So I would lose regardless.
How do you know something about yourself if you've never been in a fight?
That's true.
You've never been punched in the face.
I might be like amazing. Like
you
I might
could be.
I have like these like Matrix moves.
Like, well, in the Matrix, he even says you do not truly know someone until you fight them.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I think both Danae and I know the correct answer to this question, which is you would much rather face 10 Danae-sized Aarons because Aaron doesn't fight and Danae does. So Danae has been martial artist trained. I, however, will just walk away. So you can chase me down if you want, but
yeah,
the 10 Danae-sized Aarons will not be much of a problem for you.
It's like one of those little things where they're like filled up with air and they have like the way at the bottom where you punch them and they just kind of keep coming back up. It'd be like 10 of those just slapping them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, amazing. I do have to, you guys know, I'm not as familiar with movies as the guys are. So I might throw up some questions here that are to you very obviously silly questions. And I just am going to miss out on some context that is not asking the chat to purposefully get me fired, but it's too late now. But here's
by the way, I'm sure Barrett is standing, but I'm imagining he's sitting on a stool, which is very funny to me.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
This one's from Elevator Patrick down. Says, so someone can choose to answer this one. Can you name a better movie scene in any movie than the questions scene in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern?
Ooh, that's a good one. And I'll counter with another question scene. And that is the scene between Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master. You're right, because that whole tennis thing is just fantastic.
I'm sorry. No, it's Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken in True Romance.
Oh, it's so good.
There's nothing
so
even
good.
That's mine.
Oh, man. I mean, the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds, maybe. The train station scene in Untouchables, maybe.
Yep. The a hacking of the CIA in Mission Impossible.
I think he was trying to know who wrote that.
I guess I was thinking more just like actors, but that works for me.
I guess if it was the right answer. Showdowns between actors, then I would always gravitate towards Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington and Crimson Tide.
That's a good one.
Especially when their argument is about to come to a head and, you know, Denzel ends up, you know, sending the captain to his quarters because he can't be trusted anymore. I love that scene. They talk about two actors that you just, I mean, I could watch anything.
Just rewatch that recently. Mm-hmm. That movie's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the cinematography, my God, that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to throw out the Harrison Ford versus the president in Clear and Present Danger. How dare you come in here and bark at me like some junkyard dog? How dare you, sir?
If you were in Clear and Present Danger, though, I'd go with the computer scene.
That's good, too.
With Helm and what's his name? For Mission Impossible.
Henry Journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, the only thing I really like about any of the Kill Bill movies is that final scene between Bill and Uma, where they have that conversation before all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm. You don't like Uma and Vivica A. Fox? I like that.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question from Apathy. We are sending you back in time to save the world.
Oh, damn it.
A movie to warn everyone. What kind of talent would you be looking for? How far back would we have to send you? What's the disaster? Here's a very creative explosion for us.
This is not a good answer now based on the rest of the question, but the first thing I thought of is Home Alone 2, because then people could see Trump. And and a no to avoid him in the future.
Well, he would always show up. There was always like cameos.
Yeah, for sure.
Like Little Rascals, he shows up.
He had an entire reality show. There's no excuse.
So Little Rascals.
When I was younger, I had this idea. It had no basis in science, but I carried it for years of a story, a movie where one day the sun just doesn't rise. Mm-hmm. And of course that's ridiculous, because the sun doesn't really rise. The earth is spinning. For fun, you know, I'd give that to Roland Emmerich and see what he could do. I guess to actually solve that disaster, you'd have to basically do the core, right? Get the Earth core spinning again. And so we're going to need all the terrible actors that were in that movie.
They weren't all terrible.
Yeah, no, they were all good actors. Nobody
does a sunrise like Tony Scott. So we'd have to go get one of those mother boxes and bring back Tony Scott, RIP. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And get him hooked up with Bruckheimer.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
Most beautiful sunrise ever.
I would probably make a movie warning about 9/11. I don't know who I would get as far as talent is concerned. Charlie Sheen, obviously, because that movie he did.
Don't forget about the Russian sugar baby.
Yeah, absolutely. That 9/11 movie he did will always be in our memories. I don't know what kind of talent. I'd obviously get people who are serious and are good and respected and, people who are unimpeachable and everything like that. But I feel like a lot of the problems that we've been dealing with as a country, can trace back to that. Obviously there's some other things before that started happening, but you can trace a lot of the divisions in this country based on the 9/11, and everything and what happened afterwards. So that's the movie I would make.
I would like to withdraw my silly answer.
I know Chris had a great answer.
In light of that much superior answer.
And in all seriousness, for some reason, I thought of Richard Jenkins. He could be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't decide if we're answering the question by saying the movie we would make or like the script we would write.
I think the intent of the question is in the real world, you've been given a time machine to save the world by going back in time and stopping an event that's already happened.
By making a movie.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the movie would warn people.
Yeah.
Right. But some of us are answering actors we'd hire and some of us are answering stories we'd tell. It's moot now because I've already killed the whole momentum.
No, you haven't. You're good.
It's a question that has about four different questions in it.
So yeah.
I was the asshole that said Charlie Sheen after Chris was trying to be serious.
We could talk about this for a day.
Yeah. I'm never going to forget that.
I doubt you will.
That's going down on your annual evaluation.
Mention Charlie Sheen in any context.
Well, this will help. Then this one's from Shady. Who's your favorite B team member, and why is it Jonathan?
I'll tell you why. I've known Jonathan for over 25 years.
That's a fair answer. It's a completely fair answer.
WLV540 says, I know Barrett is a big Woody Allen fan. Thoughts on the Allen versus Farrow doc? Farrow doc. My apologies if that's a loaded question.
It's definitely a loaded question, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Is there a way to like just touch on it and... Have I stepped in something really deep here that I don't know?
Watched it, Barrett?
I'm waiting for Barrett. They asked him, but I have thoughts.
Yeah. To be honest, it's kind of like the Michael Jackson documentary and even the Tiger Woods. Sorry about my dogs. The Tiger Woods documentary. I don't feel like I changed any by watching this. I have the same... pretty much the same opinions as I did going into it. Not to say that it's not an important documentary, not to say that, you know, everything should be believed and taken seriously. But I didn't have a change of mind or change of heart.
Mm. Regardless of the actual topic, I felt the series was very heavy handed. And that's all I want to say.
There you go.
There you go. We get this question a lot. I think it changes over time, but it's one that comes up every time we do an AMA. So Jeremiah asks, what's one of your favorite videos that you've written on? So this can be just something recent. For example, I can think of several for myself, but one of the ones that I remember really enjoying was when I got to write my first truly pervy one that I was really proud of. It was about bush trimming in the Alita Battle Angel. And even though I struggled with the rest of the script, I was like, no, I have what it takes because I just wrote an amazing one here. So, and I was just thinking about that recently because I was wondering if we're ever going to see a second movie. But yeah, there's different ones that stand out. And I know it would be a lot, but if you listen to Behind the Sun's podcast, we oftentimes will tell about the struggles and the joys of writing scripts in that time too, and the A-team weighs in on that. And so I actually would like to go back and kind of listen because I know that there's some that I definitely was thrilled with and then some that I was like pulling my hair out. And I think as time goes on, my perspective changes. But that's one that I was just thinking about earlier today.
Aaron, we know yours is Nut Job 2. So
Nut Job 2 was great. I think Danae's right in that many times it's kind of the most recent ones. Bad Times at the El Royale recently, which just dropped during Sin Week, was one of my favorites to write on. Like, it was just watching that movie and going in depth. And oh, I'm sorry, it's actually Battle of the El Royale. I don't know if you know that. But yeah, I had a good time on that one. But then even right before that, Tenet, that was a big experience for me. Writing on Tenet was a ton of fun and one of the most kind of complex writing experiences I've experienced. So that was fun too.
I had a memorable experience working with Jeremy on both the last two Spider-Man movies. Those were a lot of fun to do because we're both Spider-Man people. And it was just, you know, that was just fun to collaborate on. I will say Saw 5, despite the fact I watched five Saw movies, was really fun to work on, though. And that was a really fun collaboration with Chris. And just the what we put in, you guys have no idea what we put into that video.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think it turned out really well. So that was kind of one of those things where we went a little different with it. And
I remember, Saw 5 is that I had like all the previous Saws had sort of like drifted out of my head. I was like, I don't know what's supposed to be, where we're supposed to be at this point. And just refreshing myself on that, like, oh yeah, they talked about this all the way back in Saw 1. That's weird. But then you had to kind of do it like a TV series, you know?
So that is it's an impressive series in some ways. Like, it's the continuity aspect that it has is on parallel.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a want to weigh in on there?
I was just gonna go through some quick ones. Danae, I loved writing The Grinch with you. That was a great experience. I was going to say Coming to America for Jonathan, Tenet for Aaron. It always seems to come back to Sinister with me and Jeremy. We've written many, many, many of these, obviously, but that one always seems to come back in the light.
That's my favorite video, I still think.
And for Barrett, Batman v Superman, the Ultimate Edition. I thought that was a fun experience.
That was fun. Fun.
Coming to America was fun, though. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
JC Davis asks, if you could go back in time and watch the premiere of any movie from before you were born, what would you go back in time and see?
This is a super easy, locked and loaded answer for me. It's Psycho. To see opening weekend of Psycho before like any of the there's context in that movie that nobody gets anymore just because it's so known and so seen, it's talked about, but it's not something you can experience. I would love to go into that with a blank understanding of that movie and just watch it.
That would probably be my answer. Since you took that, I'll go with maybe Alien. No, I was born. No, wait, hold on. I was alive when Alien came out. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Me too.
Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah.
I think that would be just I can't imagine seeing that spectacle in, was that 1962? I think.
Sounds right.
Just seeing that. Talk about a almost four hour movie that deserves to be almost 4 hours.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm going to go with Jaws.
Yeah.
I was not born when Jaws came out, and man, imagine seeing that in the theater for the first time without knowing anything about it. I would be riveted. I would be in that theater 20 times during its run.
Mm-hmm.
Danae's about to take her headphones off.
All right. I'll say something Star Wars just because I can't think of anything else.
All right. When were you born?
I'm sorry. I'm just
yeah. Hey, I'm going to say anything that does not reveal my age.
It'd be great if you were like Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see that.
Definitely.
Pee-wee's yeah, Big
the
Adventure.
Lion King.
Avengers Endgame.
That's right. That's right. I was going to say Jaws, but I'm gonna say The Godfather.
Mm, no kidding, man.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yep.
That would be delightful.
I have no answer.
See, we have this interesting perspective because, like, we know what's a big deal, but what if you just picked something really crazy? Anyway, go ahead. What were you going to say, Jeremy?
I mean, aliens should count, right? We were like 3 and 4.
How about this? I'm going to pick one for Jeremy.
Okay, that's great.
West Side Story.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Yes.
Yes, any of those William Castle movies would be fun, too, like where they were shocking the audience and skeletons were flying down, like House on Haunted Hill or The Tingler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a real hoot.
All right. Here's one from Bryn W. If you have to pair everyone in the Sins team up 2 by 2, who do you think has the most matching / similar tastes in movies?
Oh, Jesus.
I would assume Aaron and I would be paired because we both really enjoy animated movies, but I don't know. I don't know.
And Chris and I will watch anything.
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah. By movie taste. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I always tend to think that Aaron and Jeremy have similar tastes.
They do.
And then it's Jonathan and I, because we watch everything, like he said. And I know that leaves some stragglers because Barrett and Danae is not exactly equivalent either.
Hey,
so like,
you and me.
You know, so, I mean, that's where it starts.
I think me, Chris, and Barrett kind of work together.
When it comes to making the schedule and everything, I always tend to go on a case-by-case basis and just say, who is most likely to be in on this movie? Have I heard them talk about this movie before? Have they said anything, you know, are they passionate about this movie one way or the other, positive or negative? And I try to get the people who have had experiences with that movie or have or seem to mold into that genre the best. So that's how I usually do it. So,
yeah, you have to think about that a lot more than I think the rest of us do because you do the assignments.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you sometimes you might see 3 months where you're like, I haven't been paired with this person in forever. It's just because of the movies.
Yeah. Don't read into it, guys. Here's one from Jeffrey Michael Whitman, who asks, can you think of a movie where while you were sinning it, you were like, oh no, I think I hate this movie.
So like we liked it before.
Yeah. This is Who Framed Roger Rabbit all the way.
Oh.
Was a kid, watched that movie in theaters, loved it, had a tremendous sense of nostalgia for that movie. When it came around to sending it, I was like, whoa, there's a lot of things I just don't like in this movie at all. Sometimes you send a movie and you're like, oh, I like this a lot better, which is weird, but like, yeah, that was the one that stood out to me.
So for me, it's, you know, I have an interesting experience with going to movies. I've talked about Twister being the first movie I ever saw in a theater at like the age of 20 or whatever. and shortly after that, I went and saw The Hunchback of Notre Dame and really had a good time. It was like one of the first 3 movies I ever saw in the theater. And I remember being in there and turning to my wife and going, why are there so many children here? Just like, because in my world, I never went to movies as a child. I didn't realize it was going to be all kids in this thing. So I had a good time and enjoyed the movie. Sinning Hunchback was so, it just destroyed that movie for me. That movie is terrible.
You are so wrong. God, so, I'm going to come through this thing. Hang on. Which way are you?
I'm with you, Barrett.
I'm coming through.
Barrett, I'm with you, man.
So that does happen sometimes. But there's also the thing where, like as recently happened with Bad Times at the El Royale, where it makes a movie better sinning it. Like you're, you know, looking at it closely and the movie even gets better in your estimation. So, yeah, it goes both ways.
I would say next Thursday's Sins video.
Oh, a little tease.
I'm going to go to the schedules.
Real quick, because I know, was Gremlins one of those for you two? Or did you guys not like Gremlins before?
I still like Gremlins.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was Jeremy I talked to. I don't remember.
I don't know.
I thought maybe I'm misremembering that.
I would say probably Gremlins hasn't improved with age or anything. But I still like it. I still like Gremlins.
I'll answer this one. Phantom of the Opera, actually, because I really, really enjoyed, and we talked about this at length on Behind the Scenes, so I won't spend a ton of time, but I really enjoyed listening to the album and then seeing it on Broadway. And when the movie came out, I was like, okay. But sending it, it was rough.
It was really rough.
When you think about just all the nuances of a child being groomed to become a bride, it really sours everything pretty intensely. Mm-hmm. So, really
intensely. Yeah, for me, it's probably, I was going to say Spider-Man Far From Home, but honestly, I didn't like that a whole lot when I saw it in the theater. So I don't think that was that big of a deal. Scream 2, maybe. I still like Scream 2, but it was very easy to sin. I will say that was one of the easiest. Like, I think I had like an insane amount of sins for that one.
Here's one from Handquake for Jeremy and Aaron and Barrett. And now for Chris too. Is it different writing for a vid video that you're going to narrate other than someone else's? Like, do you write differently for different narrators as one for the writing team? So just kind of has it changed how you write now that you are narrating essentially?
No, I think ultimately you want to write the thing that's funny first before worrying about how it's going to come out of somebody's mouth. So, I mean, sure, there are times where we get to the video and you go through the narration and you're like, oh, that's not how I imagined that.
Sometimes,
and
yeah.
So you ask for a redo on those. But like, no, I don't write any different.
Yeah, the joke is first, right? Like the point or whatever. Like that's
character.
The character is first. And then, you know, there are, I think we all have different styles of delivery sometimes. Like we'll, you know, put a little emphasis in a little different way or have a little bit of different version of sarcasm or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But that's done in the recording process, not in the writing process. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From a writer's perspective, I do hear the voices a little bit differently. Maybe not like, because I can hear Jeremy's delivery and Chris's delivery and Aaron's delivery. And I haven't written for a music video since before, but I do sometimes think like, oh, I think this is how Aaron would deliver this. So that's really the only thing, but it doesn't, that's the only thing it changes is how would I write this joke? You know, a dirty Ned Flanders versus, you know, R-rated cursing or something like, cause sometimes I do try to like pull back a little bit on how I,
did you just present. Say dirty Ned Flanders?
That's Aaron. You know, because, you know, Aaron, he sometimes is like, oof, I don't know that I would insult someone like that. And it's not Aaron. It's a character. But you still want to give him the ability to, like, act that out as he doesn't want to get caught up in what he's saying. He wants
I really
to
lean
well
into
out.
The fox when I write for Aaron. I lean into the fox. I want you can all lean the fox.
He just
yeah, I want
all the fox. I'm taking fox from Jesus. A different script.
Yeah, we're creating
different ways to connect the fucks.
You're just explaining your writing process. That has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
I will say, somebody who has written for Barrett, though, I just write a lot of shouting. He likes to shout. So,
yeah.
Do I really?
Yeah. I mean, well, you get worked up throughout. It's that's your style, man. You just get kind of worked up throughout the video. And so I get to have a lot of fun with that. Whereas when I was writing music video sins that Jeremy narrated, it was mostly writing how to pronounce the singers' names. And I'm just kidding.
Moving on. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Tom Trainer who says, what do you find more enjoyable, sending a movie that you've seen multiple times or sending a movie that you're watching for the first time while you're sending it?
I like them all. So I don't think I really have a good answer for that.
I'd say the first one. It's so much more fun for me to send something like Starship Troopers or Pulp Fiction or you know, something that I've seen a million times, and I can already kind of pre-plan the targets, and you can really form what is the funniest to you at that point.
Yeah, because you know the plot. You don't have to pay attention to the plot and sin the candles in the background or the shoes on the wrong feet or what have you. So you can sort of tune out the plot-based attention and just focus on, I totally agree.
It is helpful when there, you know, I will say it is helpful, like you're talking about, when you know there's twists coming and you can go ahead and send that stuff early on, where as opposed to you don't know what's happening, then you have to go back and change a bunch of stuff that you wrote because you were wrong. Sometimes, though, Jeremy just leaves it in, which I think is hilarious. Yeah, he's like, too. I know I'm wrong here, but
I'm sending it anyway. I already wrote I spent 20 minutes writing this. It's going to be in here.
All right, everybody. It is time to talk about Mubi once again.
Mubi!
I was scrolling through it the other day, and I ran across Drugstore Cowboy, Gus Van Sant.
Ooh, yeah.
That's right. Gus Van Sant, 1989 movie starring Matt Dillon and Kelly Lynch and James LeGros and Heather Graham as these people who basically knock over drugstores. They do it in a sort of a smash and grab kind of a way, or a, you know, tricky sort of way, where they'll, you know, have some drama in the front of the building, and then Matt Dillon goes in the back and crashes through, and you know, there's no rhyme or reason to what he's doing. He's just going in there, just opening drawers, taking out a whole bunch of medicine, and then leaving. And if there's something good in there, it's great. If there's nothing good in there, oh well, they'll maybe find a way to use it later or something. But ultimately, all these guys are like very, very heavily into drugs as well. So they're not just surviving on selling these drugs. They're Matt Dillon is, I think, apparently on methadone the entire movie for most of the movie. And a lot of his, it's not done in this tragic sort of way, because it's actually a movie. It's kind of funny for a while, because there's a lot of just like ridiculous stuff. There's a scene where Matt Dillon, they ask him, can we get a dog? And he's like, no, I can't get a dog. And they tell him why he can't get a dog. He has this big story about why a dog is bad luck. And then he ends it by saying, they're like, was there anything else we need to talk about? And he goes, hats. He's like, I don't want to see a hat on a bed ever. And so there's like, what is this? What is seeing it sounds so random. And so there's stuff like that that goes on, and then about halfway through it, it looks like he's hit a moment where he's like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. So the movie is really good, really entertaining. It's one of the Gus Van Sants that I had never seen before, and would not have seen it if it wasn't for Mubi.
God, it's been forever since I've seen that movie, but I remember really liking it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that Gus Van Sant guy. He's got a good eye. He's got two of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? I found the sole reason, if you needed one reason to get Mubi, right? Mm-hmm. You've listened to these ads before that we've talked about Mubi, and you're like, I don't want another streaming service. I've got, you know, the other guys. I don't want to add this on. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Because I watched, Jeremy, you liked Birds of Prey, correct?
Yes, I do.
And Chris, you enjoyed it, right?
I did.
Okay. Kathy Yan is the director of Birds of Prey. Mm-hmm. Her first film is called Dead Pigs, and it's on Mubi as an exclusive right now. So this is the reason that you need to sign up for Mubi, is to watch this movie called Dead Pigs, especially if you enjoyed Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, Fantabulous Emancipationist and stuff. Mm-hmm. Dead Pigs. I'm not kidding. This is a great movie. This is unlike anything I've seen before. It's got shades of her work in Birds of Prey, especially from a color standpoint. It takes place in Shanghai. This is a 2018 movie. It's got shades of Magnolia in terms of a large and disparate cast. And it's absolutely delightful. It's a social satire, black comedy that's got plenty of drama in it, set in Shanghai around this bumbling farmer and his sister, who's this amazingly acted character from Vivian Wu, who's apparently a big deal in China. And she's a hairdresser and owns her own salon and everything. And she is taking a stand at the last house in this development that is coming up as part of the new, quote, new China. And she refuses to leave. So everybody from the corporation is going in there to try to get her to leave, including an American dude that's trying to reinvent his career, an American architect. This movie is all over the place, and I mean that in the best possible way. It is funny. It is a tearjerker. It's family-based, and it's got one of the best endings I think I've ever seen, most the delightful ending I think I've ever seen. I hate to, you know, compare an Asian director to another Asian director from a completely different country, but it reminds me a little bit of Parasite, but almost the inverse of Parasite. And if you watch this movie, I think you'll know what I mean. But she is fantastic. This is the only movie that she did, only feature that she did before getting Birds of Prey. So you can imagine it had to be a stunner for people to say, all right, go ahead and take our, you know, our big old studio superhero thing. Kathy Yan is one to watch. She's very much like Chloe Zhao, where like I'm basically going to watch anything that she does going forward. So that is a huge recommend. Go to Mubi, MUBI.com/CinemaSins. And you remember how I said you don't need another, you need another streaming service because it's this one? You can do it for free for a month and you can validate my claim. So go to Mubi.com/CinemaSins, 30 days free, motherfuckers.
Here's one from Miss Ree B, who says, Brad Bird kicks ass on animation. What would you want to see Chris Nolan make in animation? An example would be, I'd like to see Nolan direct a She-Ra Wonder Woman mashup.
Wow.
Oh, there you go.
Coming She-Ra! Correct.
You're going to have to get some companies to mix up there. I don't.
You guys can think about that one. I want to say, I don't know if you've seen this, Miss Ree, but I really enjoyed the She-Ra series. I think it's on Netflix.
I think you recommended that on Behind the Sun.
Really, really enjoyed that if you haven't seen it. Some delightful.
I don't know of any specific franchise or anything, but Nolan and the Wachowskis getting together would be a pretty dynamite mashup, I think. The Wachowskis always have the good concepts, but I think Nolan could take one of their concepts and make it amazing, and they could it would be I think it would just be cool if they teamed up.
That's good. This one's from Polly, who says, best car chase / favorite car chase or favorite movie. Is this an inside joke?
Matrix Reloaded. Well,
if they are referring to our movie fight with, if they are referring to our movie fights with Honest Trailers, where this question was asked, what's the best car chase? And we said the correct answer, which was the French Connection, and Honest Trailers said the wrong answer, which was the Matrix Reloaded.
Jesus, Polly, what did you just have me do?
Yeah, I kind of wish Jeremy had been arguing that one, because Jeremy came up with the best point about the Matrix Reloaded being not nearly as good, which was they made a set for that thing, you know.
Yep.
And I never brought that up. I just said, hey, French Connection's real. They didn't even get permit for that. But anyway, that's my favorite is French Connection.
I'll tell you, I got one in the vein of French Connection, but one thing I'll speak to on that Matrix Reloaded that's funny to me is that same summer you had Terminator 3. That had a better car chase than Matrix Reloaded. Mine and came out a couple years after The French Connection. It's also got Roy Schneider in it. It's a movie called The Seven Ups. Highly recommend it. I don't know how easy it is to watch, but I can't remember the name of the guy that's driving, but he's a legit stunt driver, I believe. And Richard Lynch, the actor, is riding with him. And that scene is so realistic that in the scene, Richard Lynch looks like he's about to vomit. And it's like genuine, like he is terrified. And it's just, it's so good. The one in The French Connection, though, is hard to argue with. I mean, I don't know how not to pick that one. Bullet, maybe. you know, but maybe the Deadpool when the little remote control car is chasing them.
Yeah.
I'm just joking about that one, by the way.
Right. Yeah, totally.
What about Mitchell?
Mitchell.
Where no one will be seated.
So they in the Mystery Science Theater, they point out how slow it is. Like just
yeah,
how
yeah. Emerging right? action.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Actually, I learned so you guys know I'm kind of learning about just breaking movies apart and thinking about them in these different ways that you guys have been doing for a long time. But I remember having a conversation about, oh, it was a Mission Impossible movie. And I don't remember which one, but what stands out for me in the car chase kind of thing was that everyone was talking about how well it was put together, which was my first time to think about how important it is to put a chase scene together and help you realize where they're going and how cleverly they showed the maps. And then they kind of somehow you can sort of keep up with where the chase is moving. And then I started to pay attention to other car chase scenes in other movies where it's just this like cut craziness. I never realized how much that does impact your ability to enjoy a chase scene and think about things like how it's shot. And so then I started looking up really clever ones, and I'm not gonna remember any of the movies or names because that's just what I do, but like how they actually like move cameras into cars and out the other window and like move them underneath things and get these different shots. It's really, really fascinating. And I didn't know at the time, but the one that we talked about for Mission Impossible was one that everybody was raving about.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember which one it was. I know there was a motorcycle as well, but that's probably very normal. Well, you may be thinking of
Children of Men. Maybe there's some really interesting one take
stuff. A motorcycle would be Fallout probably. Right, because he goes.
Oh, you're asking which
Mission Impossible or Mission Impossible 2? Isn't there? I mean, that's not good, but
there's probably
a motorcycle?
Car chases everywhere. In,
yeah,
in
we
Mission
would
Impossible.
Not have probably brought up how good a car chase scene was in Mission Impossible 2.
No, I'm saying I thought there was a big motorcycle sequence in that.
But
movie.
I'm assuming it's Fallout that she's talking about.
Yeah, probably.
You made me think about Extraction, which, granted, I like more than most of the people here, but it has that one taker, that oneer. In the middle that's
one take.
Yeah. Quote, yes, correct. Quote unquote one take that goes from like a car chase to a foot chase to, you know, it hits all the chase cliches, but it does it, you know, kind of in that that one shot. I really enjoyed that. I thought
that's really the only standout from that entire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
Here's one from Cal Baldwin. Which movie character would you want to put in a different movie that has a similar location or theme? So, here's the example that Cal gives. The character of One Night in Miami in Bad Times at the El Royale, or Ted in Paddington 2.
Oh, my God.
So this kind of an interesting sort of take one out and switch them around and think about how the character would impact another movie. Does anyone have one? Maybe, Jeremy, do you have one that popped into your brain?
Oh, I'm glad you called on me. Thank you.
It was your expression.
Almost thematically, right? Because One Night in Miami all takes place in a hotel room. Bad Times at the El Royale is also like in a hotel room. Ted's a bear. Paddington's a bear.
Right.
Like it's kind of matching the themes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. I would let Chris go.
There were dueling magic movies back in 2006 where you had the illusionist Edward Norton, and then you had Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman for The Prestige, and it would be nice to see Edward Norton switch over into The Prestige somewhere.
Definitely. And
be a rival in that. There was also a third magic movie called Scoop, which was Woody Allen, came out that same year. It had Hugh Jackman in it.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson, right? And is Scarlett Woody Allen in that?
Yeah, Woody Allen was in that.
Was he in that? Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah.
I was just looking for a robot outtake, and so I was looking at like funny robot moments in movies or TV shows. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I would do WALL-E for the Johnny Five one. Because they're both look the same.
Nice.
Yeah. Johnny number five loves Eva.
I know this is kind of a popular thing on Twitter, or like one of the things that's been going around, but like it would be funny to like, you know, put the Muppets in like Eyes Wide Shut or like a Friday the 13th movie. You know, I mean, just
Kermit walking around and Eyes Wide Shut.
He's like, oh, they're fucking over there.
They'd be the camp counselors in a Friday the 13th movie. I mean, you know, just
you'd have Rolf at the piano instead of Nick Nightingale
with a blindfold on.
Somebody was asking the other day, like, what would be like your was asking you guys what would be your heist team?
Yeah,
and I was thinking like Jason Voorhees would be good muscle, so like put Jason Voorhees like in Heat or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Gone Baby Gone with the Wind, where you combine Ben Affleck into a movie where Scarlett O'Hara is trying to save a child in danger.
I'm with you, Jeremy.
We'll double that with singing in the Rainmaker.
Yes, love it. Love it.
He could have done Gone Baby Gone Girl. That would have been
the same person.
Double Affleck.
I was trying to change it up.
No, but it's Casey is the actor in Gone Baby.
Oh, that's true. No, you're right. Right.
Oh, there's Gone a Baby flashback Driver. To a movie that I wish
somebody
I hadn't
just
seen.
Said Gone Baby Gone Girl. I stole their answer. I'm sorry. I didn't even read that.
All right, everybody. It's time to talk about BetterHelp.
BetterHelp. I tell you what I've been enjoying about BetterHelp recently is the communication, man. I go back and forth. I only have, weekly, somewhere around there appointments with my therapist. But we've been going back and forth on the message board in my counseling room over and over and over again, asking about, how she's doing, how I'm doing. She has passed along some like inventories that would help me. It's fantastic. And as you see now, everybody's moving to virtual doctor's visits, whether it's, physical pain or malady, whether it's, an illness or whether it's mental illness. Everybody's moving in this direction. BetterHelp has firmly planted their flag there. And it's all these licensed professional counselors that are available after you sign up, you answer a few questions, and boom, you get matched within 24 hours or so. And you're in the business. You're there. You're there to be well, and it's awesome.
I here's Jeremy's mental health therapy tip for the week, and that is to take notes. I'll tell you what I mean by that. I don't mean take notes during therapy. Although, hey, go for it. your therapist is taking notes during therapy usually, so that they're able to refer back to things you've said in future sessions. But a lot of people who are in therapy don't come to therapy prepared. And what I mean by that is a lot of times I'll be having a conversation with my wife and one of us will go, oh, I wonder if that's something I should talk to my therapist about. And when that happens for me, I write that down. When I see my therapist, I go, hey, here's the thing I was talking about. And I wondered if it was something we could discuss. You don't have to relinquish control of your part of directing your therapy. It's your therapy. Your therapist is trained and certainly can guide you when you are rudderless, but take ownership of your own therapy and take notes throughout the week, the month, whatever it is between sessions, so that you go into that next session prepared and you get more work done.
Yeah, that's a great tip. That's a good Jeremy tip right there.
There you go.
Write it down, kids. I tell you what, I found myself, and I still find myself, despite how much you hear me talk on this podcast, I still find myself apologizing to my therapist for talking too much. I don't know, Jeremy, if this has ever happened to you, but I'm like, oh, man, I'm dominating this conversation. How are you? And my therapist, God bless her, is just like, you're paying me. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So I do kind of feel weird about it, but that's what it's there for. And this service couldn't be better, and it couldn't be more easy from the comfort of your own home, from phone, tablet, computer, VR device. I'm just kidding about that, but that would be really cool. All that stuff. Go to BetterHelp.com/Sincast. Get 10% off your first month. First month is critical. Don't stick your toe in. Just jump right in. Jump right in to counseling. You can really get some things done for stress, anxiety, depression, sadness, anger, all that stuff, man. Get in the pool with the rest of us. BetterHelp.com/Sincast. Do it right now.
Here's one from Tyler. Can you either talk about a TV, the TV show that once you watch the pilot or an episode, you have to watch all of them? Or just in general, we can talk about how great The Newsroom is.
Is he saying like something you've seen before, or when you watch the pilot,
sucked
you
in were from just the like, pilot.
Like, I mean, that's Lost, right?
Lost is the answer.
Yeah.
Maybe. Really? They hadn't sucked me. For me, it was The Good Place, and that was unexpected because I really didn't think I would enjoy it. But then I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And you just want to watch the next one, and then. You know, it was very cleverly put together. So that was one thing.
Aaron was going to do Lost. I will say, what was all of a sudden, I can't remember the name of it. What was the one with Joshua Jackson and.
Oh, Fringe?
Fringe. Yeah. Fringe had me, which is J.J. Abrams, but that had me from the pilot.
And Alias, all those are good answers, actually.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad.
That's a good choice.
In fact, Breaking Bad's first 5 minutes made me want to watch the rest of the whole good series.
Call. I got to go with Euphoria. Euphoria got me with the mood, the music, the story, the acting. Oh, I want to watch that series over again.
I've been told to watch that one many times, and I'm debating on whether I want to go into it or not. But man, we can talk about that later. There's a lot of dick.
There's a lot of peen. There's a lot of peen out there.
We're okay with that.
I'm just giving her a heads up. It's usually flaccid. Sometimes.
Free the peen.
That's great. We need to see more flaccid penis. Daniel Bradley asked, Barrett, you have to recast the two main roles in Whiplash. Who do you choose?
Muppets.
I've thought about this before, actually. And I don't know if the ages line up, because I think one's too young at the time, one's too old. But John David Washington and Morgan Freeman, I think, would be excellent in those roles. I think Morgan Freeman could turn into his, is it Lean on Me? That he was the principal, Joe, whatever. Yeah. And John David Washington, man, this dude can do anything. And I think he could get himself into drumming shape. And I think that would be awesome.
Here's one from Tom Trainer who says, what movie did you hate after having it recommended to you by multiple people? That's always the worst.
I don't know if I have one that I hate, but I'm not a Gravity fan. And every single person, including everyone here, pretty much just raved about that. And maybe that was part of the problem.
Did you see it in the
theater?
Sometimes
that happens.
I did. Yes.
Okay.
You're so wrong. I'm sorry.
I don't even know that I really dislike it. I just wasn't that into it. It just didn't do anything for me.
You're not going to believe this movie was recommended to me, but I was working at a theater. And of course, theater employees and people you work with have a wide range of tastes and everything, but White Chicks was recommended to me.
Wow. I haven't seen that.
And I watched White Chicks and was not impressed at all. I did not like that movie.
Yeah, I had a coworker at Hollywood 27 strong, hard recommend Red Planet.
I know who you're talking about. I know who you do.
You're out there, buddy. But I only found out after watching Red Planet this dude had been high on fucking shrooms when he watched that movie. Mm-hmm. And I was not. And that movie sucks.
Yeah.
I just like that Chris said I was not very impressed. Like that, I just picture him watching White Chicks like with his arms like crossed. This is not impressive. Mm.
White Chicks, you say.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Terry Crews is remarkable, but the rest of the movie is awful.
My younger sister
nodding down notes.
My younger sister loves White Chicks, just to show you how great her taste is in movies.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting so I had all of my questions kind of queued up and then enough time passed that all of a sudden it just went totally away. So I'm kind of catching up in chat a little bit and seeing some requests to answer a Steven Seagal thing. Again, I could be stepping in some major shit here and I apologize in advance. This one is replace Steven Seagal with a favorite character in your favorite film. Who is he playing and how does it ruin the film?
I mean, it ruins every film, right?
Is that the joke?
So Steven Seagal as Donald O'Connor in Singing in the Rain, doing karate kicks, make him laugh. Scene is just going to be amazing.
Steven Seagal and Back to the Future, man, playing Marty McFly.
I don't even know what my favorite movie anymore is. One I've been leaning towards lately, though, is Witness for the Prosecution. So I guess Steven Seagal is Charles Laughton.
Yeah.
Matrix. So Seagal might actually blend in fine if you put glasses and a dark suit on him because he knows the martial arts.
Seagal has made a few quite good movies.
I guess if he was going to ruin it, I'd have to cast him as Morpheus. Well, that would ruin the film. But he could still do the martial arts.
Mm-hmm. He could be the Oracle.
Could be the Asselvengian.
I'd have to put him as Michael Corleone in The Godfather.
Mm,
I don't want to even think about that.
I could put him in shark as Jaws.
He's pretty close to Brando's talking speech, basically, in Godfather. Because just think about it. I'm going to give him an offer. He can't refuse. You know, it's the same fucking thing.
Under Siege 2, by the way, underrated movie. Go ahead.
Here's one from Josh Zero. Ted 2 reminded me, can each of you talk about a movie that you've walked out on or gave up on?
I only did this one time ever. Even as especially when you're a movie theater projectionist and you're trying to make sure everything is good for the next day and everything, you don't want there to be any mistakes or whatever. But there was one movie I was like, if there's a mistake in this movie, so be it. They can fix it tomorrow or I'll fix it later. It was Dungeons and Dragons. The movie with Jeremy Irons and Thora Birch,
so bad.
And Marlon Wayans, and it was a singularly horrible experience. I got about halfway through the movie, and basically what I did was I turned everything off on the projector and just let it run, like let the film run the rest of the night. And it would have been, you know, power would have still been on the projector in the morning when they came, but. Fuck it. I wasn't going to watch the rest of it. It was that bad.
I, 2013, I had just entered into like officially movie critic, going to see every movie, review it all kind of mode there right around that time. And I went and saw, The Green Inferno. Eli Roth. Man,
I haven't seen it.
That's a vicious movie.
And so it may be the only movie I've ever walked out on, but I was just like, I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to do this.
I don't need this in my life.
And honestly, from that moment on, I kind of gave myself more permission not to see movies that I knew I wasn't going to have a good experience with. It was actually overall a good turning point for, you know, kind of what I do, but I was, you know, I was just like, nah, I'm out.
How far did you get? Just out of morbid curiosity.
Half an hour, maybe. I mean, it doesn't take long before you're like, oh, that's what this movie is. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I've always avoided like the Italian cannibal films from the 80s and stuff. But what I've heard is that this is very light compared to those, but it's still like just disgusting. But I don't know. I haven't seen it. So,
yeah, I put it out of my mind pretty quick. So I don't even really remember.
I walked out of Batman v Superman before it was over. Not halfway through or anything, but just in that I know we're almost done and I'm over it kind of way. And my buddy came out after and said, dude, the dirt around his grave started floating in the air. And I was like, shocker. I was not upset that I walked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which ends up meaning nothing. Sorry.
Nothing.
I was going to say one thing I have in common with Gene Siskel is we both walked out of Black Sheep with Chris Farley and David Spade. It was just one of those things. It was like, I'm not enjoying this. I don't need to be watching this. And I did sit through Beverly Hills Ninja, oddly enough, but
it's not an unwatchable movie.
It's better than
movie.
Black Sheep from what I remember.
I tried to walk out of Two Towers, but my cousin begged me to stay. And so it was a little bit of a public display. But my favorite part of Lord of the Rings, like my most favorite part, is the return to the Shire, because it's just such a beautiful, like it's what I feel one of the big themes that Tolkien was writing about, which is that the hobbits had so many times to exact revenge and they chose not to. And so they really the whole ending thing of them getting back to the Shire and showing that whole story arc to watch Wormtongue stab Saruman on top of that tower, I was just like, oh no, you did it. I was so pissed. I was such a hardcore book fan, and I stood up and I was like, I cannot watch this. Like, that's it. You just literally lobbed up my, like, there's no coming back now. And I'm like having this like crisis in the theater. And my cousin, God bless Bianca, she just grabs me and she sits me down. She's like, please, I want to watch this movie.
That's and, one of those that they didn't need to change, that you're like, why did they change that? I know that Saruman shows up later when they go to the Shire and they have this one last battle or whatever, but like,
yeah,
you didn't need to have that. I mean, just because, yeah, you didn't need to change that just so that you didn't have to have that later. You know?
But you know, then I watched all of the making of, and it took me, and I'm not exaggerating, it took me a long time to come to terms with what they had done. And then watching the extended version, I really learned a lot about filmmaking process and how, my God, it would have been the longest movie ever if they would have kept everything in. So I get it. And I've made peace. Here's one from Gibourgois. I don't think I said that right. In fact, I know I didn't, and I apologize. I was just trying to have fun.
Bourgeois.
Barrett. You okay, Barrett? Lots of people have been.
You broke Barrett, Danae.
I know.
Good job.
Lots of people have been catching up on the classics recently. What's a classic that you've watched or rewatched recently that has not aged well? Example: Breakfast at Tiffany's.
All of them.
Balderdash. the Mickey Rooney thing. Yes, I understand. But the rest of Breakfast at Tiffany's is fantastic.
Oh my God, Hepburn in that movie.
Yes, in a good way. Oh my God! Right?
Yeah. No, she's just so Holly Golightly, right? She's great. Yeah.
Nearly every comedy that has come out since 2000. I mean, it's not really that long ago. I mean, The Hangover, Wedding Crashers,
Superbad,
Superbad. All these have things that were generally accepted by mainstream audiences that you watch now. You're like, oh shit, they couldn't do that now. So nearly every comedy that we consider classic right now. And then it gets worse the further you go back.
Yeah, I was gonna say Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds and Porky's and all these movies just have absolutely insane things that were considered so funny. Pretty in Pink,
16 Candles
is the one. 16 Candles is the one where, you know, this was a major trope in the 80s, right? Like a boyfriend who's like, I got my girlfriend drunk, go ahead and have sex with her. And that was like a thing in these movies. Like, it was so funny to have that happen.
I still can't believe they bang the gong every time they show Long Duck Dong.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like, you just watch that now, you're like, what the hell, man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've been watching a lot of classics during pandemic, and I'm kind of working my way through some I feel like I should have seen or don't remember seeing. And I'm in the 50s, and it's pretty much every movie. There's a scene or two where I'm like, okay. But White Christmas has an entire blackface number in it. Mm-hmm. And I was not ready. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe, like, I fast forwarded through some. I was so uncomfortable.
And wait
just,
a minute. Are you sure you don't mean Holiday Inn?
I mean Holiday Inn. Sorry, not White Christmas. Sorry, okay. Jeremy. Jeremy, I know
how much you love White Jeremy okay. this whole time. This is one of my favorite movies.
Singing in the Rain has an entire blackface. No, I totally understand. I'm so sorry. No, Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn. Let me say it again. Holiday Inn.
It
is
does
the movie
have
I am
the song
talking
White Christmas in it. No,
yes. Yes. Sorry, I got those two confused. Absolutely talking about Holiday Inn. And yes, there's an entire blackface routine in Holiday Inn that just I couldn't believe it. But I mean, you know, that is time goes on.
To your credit, White Christmas does have an entire number about minstrel shows.
Correct.
Which is not necessarily a lot better.
It's a lot better. It's not great, but it's a lot better.
It's like, a lot better, but it's not above reproach.
Correct.
That's what I meant to say.
Yes.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
By the way, Turner Classic Movies, anyone who's interested and has access to that, I think it's on Thursday nights, and they just started at the beginning of the month. They're actually doing this. Holiday Inn made me think of this because that's one of the movies. And I think they're doing it for a couple months where they're tackling movies that have issues, you know, dated issues to them, like Gone with the Wind, stuff like that. And they're talking about them. And it's, I don't know, it's pretty fascinating.
Here's something from Cece that I think I would like to speak to. Cece says, is there something you admire from any other member of the team but haven't found the space to say to them?
Oh, that's sweet.
One of the cool things about the team is, you know, the guys have all been friends. We've all worked together now for over a year, but everyone's really good about expressing concern for each other and care for each other. Jeremy checks in with us regularly. Barrett, we all check in regularly. We work so closely together, even though we're apart. We're constantly communicating, and it's a really cool thing. And I'm glad that you asked that question, because we don't talk about like our staff dynamic and how things kind of work, because I'm pretty sure that might be more boring than our fun opinions about movies and stuff. But just kind of a peek behind the scenes, we spend a lot of time talking to each other, and I know I personally feel really full about what I do, and not shallow compliments like, you know, hey, blah, 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 but real, like, specific stuff. You did really good on this, or we really appreciate this about you. And so, yeah, it's a really fun team to work for. So I would hope that nothing has been unsaid. But the cool thing is that if it does need to be said, I think, like, it's just door open policy. Everyone's really open and comfortable talking to each other.
Yeah, I love when we do BTS every Friday, we'll have like, I don't know, I feel like we have like 30 minutes of therapy every Friday morning.
No, that's true. You're not wrong.
In a good way, in a very positive way. It's just, we get to let stuff off our chest about what's going on in our lives. And it's been fun getting to know Danae and Aaron over the last couple of years. So,
yeah, totally.
Good question. Turd Ferguson asks, we've heard a lot of theater stories. Did any of you actually work in a video store? Any good stories from there?
I had sex in just about... I should not have said that.
Too late now. You're already committed.
Too late now.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
This is,
all the way
this
in,
is
baby.
Like what I did last Sin Week.
All the way. All the way.
Did I break Sin Week?
You can't just put the tip in.
It's too late.
What are you talking about? Were you talking about the penis size thing you did at last
Sin Week? Last Sin Week. Yeah. I was like confidently defending penis size.
I used that as a cold open for the bloodshot mini pod.
Oh, I worked at Blockbuster for a while.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that made my day.
Hey, Jeremy, in Tennessee. Which one?
Which one?
Oh, I don't think I've been to that one.
I need to visit.
No. Barry Moore.
So when I saw that that documentary, The Last Blockbuster, the one that's in Oregon, Jeremy's probably fucked there before.
People are going to have like this pilgrimage to what is now some other store and just be like, hey, we're here just to look around.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that'll do it for that question. We'll move on. Barrett, actually, did you have a story about video? Barrett,
tell us about your...
You know what? It's kind of a weird story. I worked at Hillwood Video, which is West Nashville.
Yeah.
By the Walmart. And I worked there for 4 days because I got a better offer, paid more money at the Hollywood 27. And so that was my journey to movie theaters through video. And my manager was pissed off when I left after 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did not have sex in the Hollywood. No, I did in the Hillwood Video. I did not.
Well, there's a Hollywood Video too, so that gets confusing.
You too.
I worked at Blockbuster. Just to come back with that is just so good. Oh, it's so good.
Okay,
I'm gonna
still laughing about Chris saying he was not he was not impressed with the white chicks.
That's gonna come back to me for sure many, many times. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
I'm gonna assume you just want me to move on, Jeremy. So I'm going to this one's actually emailed in. This is from Steven, who says, What one Oscar travesty do you wish you could change? And what Oscar travesty do you wish people would stop talking about?
I'm sorry, it's pronounced traversity.
You thought somebody else should have won, or like an actual like crazy incident that happened?
You thought somebody else should have won.
Okay.
And then there's others where they won and people won't stop talking about it. And you're just like, I'm fine with it.
I will say the one that bugs me still to this day is that, and I, especially now that I'm older and I really think back about it, Al Pacino and Denzel Washington are probably my two favorite actors, or they're right up there. I mean, they're right up there, especially modern actors. Al Pacino getting the, like, we've got to give him one for Sin of a Woman. Mm-hmm. Not he's bad in Sin of a Woman, but it's a Denzel makeup Oscar. Washington played fucking Malcolm X in one of the greatest performances ever. And he lost to Al Pacino in Sin of a Woman.
They nominated Pacino twice that year because they knew they were going to give it to him. And
was Glengarry the other one?
Well, yeah, would have preferred they just give it to him for Glengarry. And then, you know, you can see these maneuvers. You know that I don't know how that voting works exactly, but you know they are told beforehand, we're very strongly considering wanting this to happen, so be sure that you put that in or whatever. But one of the biggest all time, I've never stopped harping about this since I saw Do the Right Thing, but that didn't even get nominated for Best Picture. It got nominated for screenplay and it got nominated for Danny Aiello. The movie itself, I mean, didn't get nominated, and Driving Miss Daisy is the one that wins.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst Oscar travesties there is. In 2010, The King's Speech beating either The Social Network or Inception is insane to me. And I think over time, Social Network has gotten an even higher esteem by people over the years. I don't think anybody gives a fuck about The King's Speech. It's just, you know.
And no, how many times have you watched that movie?
I've still never seen it.
It's not the same level as what you would watch Social Network over the years. The one that I don't know if there's too many that people are like, oh, that's a travesty, and I'm like tired of hearing it. But Marissa Tomei winning for My Cousin Vinny was considered sort of a an upset, I guess. But her category, I mean, wasn't. I mean, it had Vanessa Redgrave in it. It had Miranda Richardson. There was a lot of legends in there. But Marissa Tomei's performance in that movie has endured, I believe.
We'll talk about a comedy that still holds up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, that movie's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Academy rarely gets the director thing right. Like that's the one. Like Hitchcock not having any director wins. Kubrick not having any. Like it's one of those interesting things for me to see how many great directors never win an Oscar for Best Director.
Who beat Hitchcock though when Rebecca won?
I don't know. He was nominated like four or five times, but he never won one. So that always stands out to me. Curious Case of Benjamin Button getting like 13 nominations. I'll never understand that. As long as I live, I don't understand that one. But yeah, other than that, it's the basics, you know, Saving Private Ryan getting beat by Shakespeare in Love and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Here's one from Luke. And hey, Aaron, let me know how long we're going too. Because
I don't know that I have the answer to that question.
Here for like 6 years. Here's one from Luke who says, what are some of the coolest things that you've gotten from fan mail? I will give you guys some time to think about this. I saw it and I went and grabbed it. It's this card that I got at Sin Week last year from Madison, who wrote me this really sweet message, essentially, which was this kind of cool moment where I was feeling a little bit of out of place as the new person on the team. And we all met at the movie theater to watch a movie, and we're all kind of standing around. And I just wanted to take a couple pictures. And so I asked her, I was like, would you take a picture with me? And turns out that was a really important thing because she was feeling out of place too. And so she just wrote about how that gave her a sense of confidence and not feeling alone. And it was kind of a reminder that sometimes you think you're the only one feeling a little out of place, and it just grabs somebody beside you and say hi and kind of interact. And so I just really appreciated that a lot. So this is one of my favorite things I've gotten.
One of my favorite things I've gotten are Jonathan's Rolos. No, I love these coasters. I think we all got one of these coasters.
Yeah, those are from Pez.
Yeah, those are really cool. Yeah, and people will send, like, we talked about Smarties, and somebody sent us like whatever the Canadian version of Smarties is. So yeah, that's fun stuff. Love that kind of stuff.
Metscast sent me some Las Vegas Raiders stuff, which I still got to get nice. From Chris, but that was awesome.
You guys are so sweet. Mm-hmm. We do appreciate it.
I mean, nearly everything that I've gotten at the P.O. box.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, so that's Jacob's handiwork there.
Of course. Mr. Martindale.
There are people who've sent in, like, you know, letters, and Jeremy, who I know doesn't want to broadcast this necessarily, but it's a good deed. He's given stuff to schools, and mm-hmm. schools have written back and saying how much they appreciate, his help, with giving them pencils and paper and things like that, notebooks and stuff like that. Those are always like, just when you open them up, you're like, oh my God, this is so like amazing to be experienced, to read this and experience this, and then being able to share it with everybody else later is a great experience.
Yeah, so. This world does not deserve Jeremy, by the way. And it's just, and I know all you guys love him, obviously, that are listening to this, but yeah, no. He's amazing.
Yep. I think this is a beautiful place to kind of bring us, you know, towards an end of what we're doing here, simply because it kind of connects this whole thing together, right? Like, the fact that we get to spend it together in this way as, you know, once a year with Sin Club and that kind of stuff, and just the relationship that you invest in us is humbling and wonderful, and we're so thankful for you guys, and appreciate you quite a bit. So I don't know if everybody else on the team, as we kind of close out the last virtual event, has any words they want to say, but yeah, mine would just be much love.
I would say on a butt stuff question, but that's okay.
I would say all of these other people are amazing human beings, and I have seen Chris help fund independent movies more than once, and I have seen great heart in all of them, and I appreciate compliments, but they all deserve them as well.
So. Oh, thanks, man.
Mm-hmm. It's also awesome because we feel like you guys are very similar. I've actually had many conversations with many of you about ways that you're helping the community too. And especially this last year, it's just been such a strange year. I saw in the chat many people saying that they hadn't had an opportunity to be social until now for almost a year. And this community is something that extends beyond just our live hangouts. You can join our Discord. We have a really active Discord with some fantastic people, lots of different channels you can join. You can chat on Patreon. So there's lots of ways to stay connected. So I guess from all of us, thank you guys so much for joining us for the final kind of moment of Sin Week 2021. Thank you so much for making it successful. And please be ready. We will be at... He made it. We will be asking for your guys' feedback. Oh, okay. Barrett.
The chat has been requesting it. So Barrett is.
They love Barrett Puppy Cam. My puppies aren't in here today. I kicked them out.
William Perry.
Oh God.
We're going to be asking you guys for your feedback shortly. So just be watching Patreon. That's just an opportunity for us to say, what did you like? What do you want us to do more of? What do you want us to see us do next year? Obviously, we're going to be doing an in-person event again, which will be awesome. But there's a lot of things we experimented with this year. So we're really curious for your feedback. But thank you guys for joining us, and we will catch you later.
Bye. You guys are awesome! Happy Sandwich!
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Yeah.
Fucking imbeciles.
Back to you, fuckers. He's like, let me tell you guys, that's the tip of the fucking iceberg right there. That's the tip of the iceberg. Like, this is not even worth, that's not even close to how much bullshit I had to go through and cop out. And the guy asking the question goes, well, is there anything that you could tell us as an exclusive? And of course everybody's like, yeah, you know, San Diego Comic-Con. And he's like, look, okay, I'll tell you this one story. I'm saying that this may have happened, and it didn't really happen, but let's think hypothetically this is what happened. And and he says there's a story of like how this is a perfect like story for us too, because there's some elements to it that work. But like he's like, I was standing out there with Bruce. I was standing somewhere on a street with Bruce Willis, and we were, I don't know what, I guess waiting for the next shot, or they were in a car. I can't remember where they were, but they were stopped there. And these two guys come up in a truck, and then they notice Bruce Willis, and they're like, hey, Die Hard, and everything. And he's like, and I love that, man. I love it when people come up to me and they're like, you know, Silent Bob or Clerks or whatever. And it's like, because you know who a real movie fan is when they just call somebody by the movie title. and he keeps coming back to saying this. No, this didn't really happen. I'm just saying, this is a hypothetical story. That, you know, this didn't really, really, really work. It didn't happen. But he's like, he turned to Bruce Willis. He says, man, that must feel fucking awesome, man. People coming up and just saying, you know, just, you know, giving you all that adulation and everything. And he said that Bruce Willis turned to him and he said, I feel sorry for those guys or something, and walked off or something like that. Just didn't acknowledge the, you know, the coolness of people just, you know, saying, hey, how awesome you are and all that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah,
I can imagine that's a very Bruce Willis thing. Go, if you're going down this path, go, watch Kevin Smith talk about his Die Hard experience.
I saw that.
Have you seen that one?
That one's awesome. I saw that in the middle of all that. It's
like, I'm eating Bruce Willis chicken outside of his trailer. Yeah, what's up, yeah. Jeremy, by the way?
What's up?
Yeah, because he says something to the effect of he didn't like the Timothy Oliphant character, how it was written. And yeah. he wanted it, and he's like, Timothy Oliphant's playing it like a pussy, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he said that he runs into this one guy who he thinks is Bruce Willis's bodyguard because he's so huge and yeah. just muscles everywhere and everything. And he's like, hey man, are you Bruce Willis's bodyguard? He's like, no man, I'm one of Bruce Willis's writers.
Yeah, he writes only for Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis.
Apparently he's got 20 of them or something like that. They're right.
I want to be one of those guys, man. How do you get that gig?
I know.
Just like be attached to fucking Tom Holland or something like that. Like I'll write you your dialogue, Tom. I'll take care of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Apparently I've heard that with Ben Stiller, and I've heard that with
really?
A couple. Yeah. Ben Stiller apparently, like, I guess the idea is he likes the script, he likes the situation, but he wants to have somebody come in and write that makes it sound like it's him in the movie. So he's never a different person other than Ben Stiller playing.
Yeah. I could kind of get that. It's not like Bruce Willis is stretching in his roles. It's the last Bruce Willis, Death Becomes Her, maybe was the last one where he played something against mm-hmm. type.
Yeah. Yeah. Should do what the old soldiers who wanted to get into the war, who weren't 18 yet or whatever, would put two dimes in their shoes and they would say, I'm over 20 or I'm over 19.
Nice.
And they could say that with a straight face without lying.
Huh. I don't remember. That's a nice pull right there.
I don't even remember what that was from, but I remember that being a story about how kids would get into the war, you know, by lying about their age and being able to say it with a straight face.
Fucking kids, man.
I right.
Go get out. It, you dicks. I've got a Max Richter album basically where he redid the Vivaldi stuff.
I've seen that. Yeah. Four Seasons.
Yeah, I've got that. Listen to that from time to time because it's very, very pleasant. Very nice.
It is, man. Vivaldi is one of the oldest classical composers that I've listened to. He's pre-Baroque. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, like his stuff, his symphonies are his violin concerto is one of the like most exciting things that I've heard in classical music.
Yeah.
I did enjoy Top Chef last night. I finally watched it, by the way.
It was you weren't watching it as it aired?
No, I was finishing up Ford v Ferrari because it's so goddamn good. I can't stop watching it when it comes weird. On.
I have a weird relationship with that movie. I am riveted right up until about the last 20 or 30 minutes, and then I just quit caring.
I understand. And that movie has a bunch of endings. It's a roller coaster.
Yeah, and it's. I think the ending is where that movie loses me because showing him die feels, well, it frustrates me as a viewer. Anyway, maybe the movie's not about what I think it is. We're not here to talk about Ford v Ferrari.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying because it could have been after the race. It could have ended.
We're going to go get him next year. Boom. Roll credits.
Yeah. I mean, we're just put some text saying this is what happened later or whatever. And then
they did not.
And then you got the coda of him going over to the house, too. So it's like,
come on, man. Come on.
I think it works for me, but I understand what you're saying. It's like Castaway. You know, does the last 20 minutes of that really need to be in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's in the hotel room looking at fish,
it'd be funny if he's took him back on the plane and he says a couple of words or whatever and then just cut straight to him in Texas at the crossroads.
We have excised that portion of the entire movie. How did he get here?
It's weird.